Welcome back to the Cadet Conversations and Coffee Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Collison. I sit down with different teachers from Iowa Falls Alden High School to talk to them about why they love teaching, their interests, and just who they are as people. We've yet to have coffee on the podcast with our guest, but we still like to sit down and talk with them and learn more about them. This week on the pod, I interview high school science teacher Jim Herzog. Mr. Herzog taught me in high school. He's one of the smartest guys I've ever met. He was a guy who could make chemistry fun for even students like me who didn't necessarily love science. It was really interesting to talk with him, just not only about where he was from and his upbringing and kind of his path to teaching, but also just to see how he views students. You know, he's a guy that every young teacher should listen to because he truly has the students' interest in mind with everything he does with education. I hope you like the episode. And if you do, subscribe to our podcast, follow us on Spotify or Anchor or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks. Okay, I'm here with Jim Herzog, high school science teacher at Iowa Falls Alden High School. I know you as my chemistry teacher from back in 2008. I wasn't much of a science guy, but you were an excellent teacher.
Thank you.
Thanks for being on the podcast.
No problem.
Awesome.
Glad to do it. Glad to do it.
So tell me a little bit about your family and where you grew up.
Well, I grew up with seven siblings, and I grew up in a town named Mabel. It's just across the border. It's actually 3 miles north of the border, right near Decorah. So we used to, when I was a teen, we used to go a lot of times to Decorah to see what was happening. So
cool.
Hang out near Luther. I don't know if you're familiar with Luther College.
Yep.
Down there. And the Whippy Dip and the Mabe's Pizza.
You bring up that pizza place.
Yeah.
My sister is an admissions counselor for DMAC. And
yeah.
She will make trips to Luther, mm-hmm. and she says she always gets that pizza.
Oh, yeah. It's very good. Yeah, it's very good. My brother is 10 years older than me. Mm-hmm. And then I have another brother who's 6 years younger than me.
Oh, wow.
So we've got quite a span. Yeah.
Yeah.
So my oldest brother, and then he had four sisters. Mm-hmm. And then I came along, and then I've got two brothers that are younger than I am.
Yeah.
So we've got quite a stretch out. And my dad was a pharmacist, and my mom obviously had plenty to do with raising eight kids. Mm-hmm. And we lived just outside of town, and he ran the pharmacy. And yeah, so
awesome.
That's the story of my younger childhood anyway.
For sure. Did you so like you, I have some siblings who are quite a bit older.
Mm-hmm.
Did you find that was did it make growing up with siblings older, was it almost more like an uncle? I always felt like my brother was almost more like my uncle. Like
mm.
he was, you know,
mm-hmm.
he was off going to college and I was just in third grade.
Right.
You know, we've got a lot closer since then, but
right.
I know it's always kind of an interesting dynamic.
I'd say it's fairly similar. We sometimes talk about the older family and the younger family.
Sure.
And I think that held in, again, until you get into young adulthood, and then you get to know your older siblings a lot better. My brother, yeah, he was, by the time I was like formative at all, you know, like 7 or 8, mm-hmm. he was off in college. So,
yeah.
I mean, I just, you know, I really had no idea of him until I became old enough. And then we, you know, he'd come back for holidays and finally, you know, and I actually lived with him for a while up in Minneapolis. So yeah, we became, you know, quite close. And yeah, so, but it's an interesting dynamic when you got that many, you got kind of groups as you go through, but then as you get older, you kind of, you know, everything readjusts.
Absolutely.
Relationship wise.
So you said you grew up in a town called Mabel.
Mm-hmm.
So after you grew up, is it Mabel High School? Is it
Mabel Canton High School? And there's probably there's a couple other small towns, you know, like Owosso that didn't make the cut for name, but yeah, very
awesome.
Small classes of about, I think I graduated with 39 maybe.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Very small.
Awesome. So after Mabel Canton,
mm-hmm.
where'd you go?
University of Minnesota. I went to pursue engineering because I was, you know, I like school a lot, but I was really science was always one of my strengths. And I did actually get a scholarship from the Air Force. And so they also wanted to push me towards, you know, the engineering. And so I thought, yeah, that's good. And I went to the University of Minnesota. I didn't like marching in the middle of the morning.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know, there's something about, you know, well, we've got that. Our 8:10 start now is really early for kids. I don't know how they do it. And in college, it's just like that was enough of a turnoff. I eventually said to the Air Force, I thank you for the scholarship, but I'm going to pass. Mm-hmm. But I did go all the way through engineering school and got my degree. But then I ended up going back to education.
Awesome. Was there a moment where you thought, you know, maybe I'd like teaching?
Yeah, I had a couple things. I was really close a couple times to working in engineering. And then as it didn't work through, I was like, you know, and I kind of thought this all the way through. I made a couple mistakes. I tried to get through in 4 years,
sure,
which is really tough to do in engineering. And one of the compromises I did to get through in 4 years was I didn't do an internship. Mm-hmm. And they weren't stressed at that point. I don't think now you could get through an engineering school without doing an internship. Or I wouldn't recommend it because I just didn't really have enough feel. I mean, I had enough feel for the discipline, but I didn't really have enough feel for what I would do when I got out. And I started to question myself. And I look back at some of the things that, you know, it excited me. And going to school and being engaged in school has always been very exciting for me and always been, you know, I like the intellectual stimulation of it. So, yeah, I decided, hey, let's do it.
Yeah,
I went back to school.
And I think that probably is what makes you such a strong teacher is that the conversations about learning and how education has changed. And I'm sure in your career, things are quite different from when you started.
Oh, definitely. I'm quite different than when I started.
Yeah.
And my knowledge base is quite different than when I started. And not all that helps me. I mean, but usually it does. Yeah. Oh, goodness. I've been doing this for almost 30 years. And when I think back, I didn't know very much physics when I started. I didn't know very much chemistry when I started, you know, despite going through college. And teaching's changed a lot. Back then, you know, I taught out of a textbook, and now textbooks are downplayed. And yeah, we've just changed priorities a lot over the years. And kids have changed a lot.
Yeah. You know,
because they've been raised in different circumstances. So
certainly, yeah. So tell me about your family here in Iowa Falls.
I'm married, and my wife and I have had three kids, and you probably know all of them.
I know all three.
I had Jackson and Alex, who are younger than you,
yep.
And Laura, who is a year older than you, and they're all off, and they're all married, and they've all got, pretty good, well-paying jobs.
That's the goal,
and,
right?
yes, independence, starting in about middle school, or, well, even a little bit earlier, probably all the way through, but it really becomes concrete and early. Their early teen years, you got to build independence. You got to build responsibility and independence. And I think it worked pretty well. Yeah. And so Jackson's in Ohio right now. He and his wife, I think they might be expecting, in fact.
Oh, wow.
Wait, is this going to go on the air? I think that's official.
Yeah. That's awesome. Congrats.
Yeah. And he's in residency, and his wife teaches. She's got a PhD in English, early American literature or something. And then Alex is up in Rochester, and she's married, and her husband is in the car business, and Alex is in the nursing business.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And then Laura's over in Clarion, pharmacist. And her husband, Ray, her husband mostly stays home and raises their two kids, although he does some teaching. He still does a little music teaching on the side, too.
That's awesome.
1 or 2 days a week, I think.
That's cool. Yeah. I'm just getting started with this whole parenthood.
Yeah, so, I know, it's kind of fun, isn't
it? Yeah, and having gone to school with all your children, I know that you did an outstanding job raising your kids.
I credit my wife a lot. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's the right answer.
Right. Well, when we were younger, we weren't. I was teaching at that time in West Bend, and when I started teaching, my pay was $18,000, which even then wasn't very, it's not very much now, but it wasn't very much then either.
Yeah.
And she didn't work, and she stayed at home with the kids, and she is just excellent, you know, in raising our kids. And you know, being in the education business, obviously we're going to, and just my family, the way my family had grown up, my mom and dad had both gone to college, and their parents, I think, for the most part, had gone to college. So, you know, that idea that education is just a granted, you know, it's, you're going to do well in education. It just seeps out every pore. Mm-hmm. And so that just helps a lot. I mean, a lot of kids deal with, it's actually just the opposite. Education has not been very good for their parents. They had bad experiences. And so that just makes it so much harder.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, for some kids can do really well without a lot of formal education, but, you know, in general, the more formal education you have, that, you know, you're just able to,
it opens more doors.
Yeah, yeah. You're able to do a lot more things.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. So I think we hit on this a little bit, but mm-hmm. let me ask you, and maybe talk more about your younger years, you know, at Mabel Canton High School. What did you like and dislike about being a student at school?
Well, I mostly just liked it. Back then my memory was, you know, really good. And I, you know, I could make connections for the most part. So, you know, when teachers talked or said something, I got it and mm-hmm. I understood it. Plus I read a lot. My second grade teacher, and well, even before that, my siblings and my mom had taught me to read. So, you know, I just got exposed to a lot of information. And then you get a lot of positive feedback when you know things. And pretty soon that's your thing. And so school's good for you because yeah. you're good at school. And so I liked all classes. There's not a lot I didn't like about it. Other than I'd say probably by the time I was a senior, I have a lot of empathy for seniors because by the time I was a senior, some of the, you know, the procedures we have become a little confining. You're about ready to leave and you're like, really? I'm like 18. I'm going to go off to college next year and you're going to, you know, this is how we're going to do it. And I'm, yeah. You know, so I kind of, every once in a while that attitude would slip in, but overall it was pretty good. I could be rambunctious when I was in high school, rambunctious. That's a name.
Yeah. Yep. Of course.
Yeah. But, yeah, overall it was just a fantastic experience. And again, there was, you know, if we want to get into privilege conversation, but I, you know, mm-hmm. all my situation, I was so privileged. So it was just so easy. Mm-hmm. Everything was always just very easy. And it's just, you know, as I look back, it's just like ridiculous. Cause now I know it's just not so easy for everybody.
Sure.
There's so many things that made it easy for me that I had that people just don't have. So.
Was that as like a young teacher, mm-hmm. was that a part of the challenge, was understanding that maybe not every student learned the way you did or liked school the way you did?
Boy, there were a lot of things I learned as a young teacher, and I don't know that that was one of them that mm-hmm. really sunk in right away. As a young teacher, let's see, one of the things that couple ideas that helped me out the most as a young teacher were you had to take a positive attitude towards students mm-hmm. because you had to deal with them every day. And I, you know, I did the lounge thing, you know, every once in a while, and some staff members would just speak ill of students. And it just started to occur to me, you know, now how are you going to deal effectively with that student after you just spoke so right. you know, poorly about him. I mean, now you're going to go in there the next hour. You don't think that's going to reflect on the way you deal with that student.
Yeah.
And it, you know, I can almost just see where I was at the time. And it's just like, whoa, that's kind of a big idea.
Yeah.
And,
it's almost like, why do you like to teach? You
know? Yeah. Right. Yeah. And you know, well, right. Yeah. It's because of the students. And then granted, there are a few students that can be a problem, but you know, if you are constantly complaining about them or constantly talking about them, it's not going to make the problem. And then coinciding with that is the idea that the only thing that can make your experience better between you and the student is if you change something. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, again, some staff took the idea, you know, if they complained enough about them maybe they'd invent a new kind of student that would come in their room that was just perfect, you know, and then teaching would be like a blast and easy.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, no, that's not how it is. So just establishing that locus of control within yourself that yeah. if things are going to get better, you're going to be responsible for the change, not the students. Or or you can affect the students, but not nearly as much as you can affect yourself. So those two things, I think. That, learning a lot of science and, yeah. you know, and learning a lot about kids. So there's a lot of things you learn as a lot of a young teacher.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really good idea. You know, a strong idea about like changing yourself to try to change that relationship, changing how you approach it.
Right. And I know when I mentored Mr. Keeker, Ryan, I think that's one of the things, I think that was probably one of my most successful mentor-mentee relationships or what mentor-protege or whatever you mm-hmm. want to say. And really getting that point across. And it's, you know, because that just, it's so powerful. And in fact, really, if we could give our students one thing, one idea, you know, that the idea that if, you know, there's something you want, or if there's some goal that you have, if you're going, you know, if you put forth effort towards that goal, you can change, you know, how the world treats you. That look, getting that locus of control or that ability to change within them. And because we both know there's some students that, you know, they're out on the ocean and it's the ocean that's determining their course.
Yeah.
Right. They're just bobbing there. And they're not steering it at all. Then so get empowered. Well, that's part of it was part of our mission, you know, empowering students at one point, you know, giving them the power to understand that they can control their circumstances, at least to a certain extent.
Yeah. I'm glad I'm doing this podcast because I'm learning a lot right here. So this is great. this is good. So let's move away from school.
Okay, good.
What's
a little heavy.
Yeah. What do you love to do in your free time?
Well, I'm a big crossword guy. I like crosswords a lot.
Yeah. Any particular publication?
That I do the New York Times. Yeah. I do the New York Times. I do it all week long. And Monday's a breeze. And, you know, at this point, I've been doing them now for, well, I used to do a lot with my dad. And then, you know, it's one of those things you pick back up again. I picked it up like in serious about 5 years ago. And Monday's a breeze. And by the time I get to Saturday, sometimes I got to look up spellings or I got to, you know, every once in a while I got to have the great Google, well, DuckDuckGo in my case, help me out. I did my own antitrust Google a couple of years ago. but yeah, so I really like those. I love reading too. Again, I picked this one up, I think about the time my kids graduated about 10 years ago, maybe a little bit more, maybe about 15 years ago, I decided to go back and read the classics.
You came into a PD one day and you're like, what do you think of this text? And I'm like, I've never read that. And I'm the English major.
Yeah.
But you were reading it. That's so cool.
Yeah, I've read a lot. And I went back and, you know, I just went down a list, you know, you know, the B. Dalton or whatever, the publishers just make a list. And they basically make a list because nobody owns the copyright on them. And so they like to sell the books because it's all theirs. Anyway, I just went read through them a lot, and you just learn so many perspectives so quickly and so many ideas quickly. And last couple of months I haven't been reading classics, but still, I think it's really a powerful way to get ideas.
Yeah,
I like it.
It's kind of I always talk about this with my students. A lot of what we read in English class, you know, the different books we read or poems we read, they're, you know, kind of a view into history as well. So it coincides with history class a lot, but, you know, I think it's great to read these books because these ideas were being created at a time based on what was going on around these authors. And, I just remember, I can't remember what the specific book was, but I remember you came into PD and you said, hey, have you read this? What are your thoughts? And I was not prepared to have that conversation. And so I quickly looked it up and I was like, oh yeah, that would have been in this class, but I didn't get assigned it. So I didn't read it.
Yeah. I got a lot of favorites.
Yeah.
And some of these works are just, and they're harder to read at first, but after you read more, you get a little more adept at it. Cause I think I've told you this story. I remember going through high school English and I remember English teachers talking about theme.
Yep.
Well, when I read in high school, I strictly read for plot.
Yep.
I mean, I love plotty books. I read science fiction, you know, I mean, things go along. I want to see what's happening. In fact, my wife used to get mad at me. She goes, well, you didn't even read all the words. I'm like, well, I don't need to. I just need to know the plot.
Exactly.
I don't have to read all the description of the, you know, what the room looked like. Yeah, sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. So I was real plot, but with the classics, I think it helped me go towards, you know, that the author is really trying to, you know, really describe what's out there. And then you can kind of go, oh, yeah. And you can kind of pull the patterns out of it and you kind of pull the insights out of it. It's kind of fun. But yeah, there's been some, I don't know, have you, well, put you on the spot.
Yeah,
here,
go, let's do it.
Have you read, I always have a hard, Middlemarch.
I have not.
By George Eliot.
No, I have not.
She is just a fantastic, I mean, and the other thing that just kind of blows your mind, you mentioned how each book is kind of in history.
Sure.
And you can take something from there. Mm-hmm. But what I've seen, and I've read a lot of Brit Lit, particularly, you know, 1718, 1900s type stuff. Not that much has changed either.
No.
There's some universal themes. It's like, you know, Dickens writes a book and people are, you know, they got no automobiles, they're riding around on horses and, you know, they got nothing to do and there's not light all the time and they're busy all the time.
Yep.
They're busy. I mean,
yes.
People are busy. Then we aren't any busier now because we've got phones or, you know, we got electronics. Everybody's always been busy and will be busy.
Oh yeah.
So,
there's that's something we do talk about when we do read those classics. We just, we're just finishing To Kill a Mockingbird in English too. And, you know, we started talking about the conversation of, have you read To Kill a Mockingbird?
I actually have not. Okay. Now, I'm gonna claim the Mr. Newman perspective here.
There you go.
There's a number, he says he hasn't read any books. He just knows all them. This one, I haven't read it, but I'm pretty familiar with
sure,
it.
Sure, yeah. And one of the big themes and talking points is racial injustice, especially in the South in the 1930s. And we had a student that said, you know, there's connections that I can make to things that are going on right now. And it was just this moment of even these classics, you know, that were a reflection of the time in which they were written, or at least a time in the author's life. Our kids are able to find those connections. And that is what's cool about, you know, being a lifelong reader.
Yeah, so. I like it a lot. That, of course, my walking.
Yep.
Another one, that thing I like to do.
Yeah, if you folks don't know what Mr. Herzog looks like, I'm sure you've seen him walking around, because he walks almost every day to and from school, even in the winter.
Yeah, although I skipped today. It was kind of rainy and bleak.
I don't blame you.
Anyway, I was thinking back to your racial you know, in To Kill a Mockingbird, racial injustice. Boy, haven't there been a lot of things though these days that bring it out? And I think we've missed some of the focus, you know, with the policing issues, although that brought it to the head. But I think we've seen now some of the, you know, there's a lot more subtle things that are going on to, you know, keep people, you know, in their places, if you will. I mean, it sounds a little bit, I mean, that's basically what it is, you know, I want opportunity and I can't, you know, if we give other people opportunity, how can I and my kids have opportunities?
Yeah.
And, you know, I mentioned that the system's worked really well for me and my kids and for you and your kids. And, you know, so it is a tough thing, but you really gotta, I mean, there's a lot of institutions that might be, what is it, propagating this problem we have?
Yeah, definitely.
Anyway.
So we have a
let's get to the important question.
Well, I was going to say, I send you these questions at a time, and we always do a category. Well, it's a category. I don't know how I would describe it. I call it Mount Rushmore. And what a Mount Rushmore list is, it's a group of four, not necessarily a
four?
Rank.
Four? Oh, okay.
Yeah, a group of four.
I can do four.
Perfect. Yeah. A group of four of an all-time list of something.
Okay.
You know, for example, with Mr. Moses, I did your Mount Rushmore of Chicago Cubs baseball players.
Okay.
With Miss Nistel, I did your Mount Rushmore of Harry Potter characters.
Okay.
So having been in your class and now being a colleague of yours for a few years, I know that you are a fan of science fiction. So what is your Mount Rushmore of science fiction films?
Okay. Are you going to give me yours then afterwards?
I mean, I can try, but mine are more of the Hollywood science fiction genre, you know, and the blockbusters, but, and some of those might exist on yours, but I do know you've probably seen more than I have.
Perhaps. All right. So here's my list.
Okay.
And there is no ranking, right?
No ranking.
But I do have a ranking.
Okay. Tell us the ranking if you want.
Okay. Four, I'll go with Star Trek 2009.
Okay.
The return of the Star Trek franchise was really good. J.J. Abrams just knew how to pull all the old strings from TOS and just, you know, just make us old TOS fans just go, oh, this is so cool.
Yeah.
It was delightful. And then they made two more, and I think they're about done now again. So I don't know. I think they're going to have to hopefully reboot that franchise. With an honorable mention to Star Trek II.
Which was Into Darkness, or you're talking the original?
Oh, the original Star Trek movie.
So is that one
Captain Kirk, the Shat version?
Okay, so is that one the? I'm not a Trekkie. Is it the Wrath of Khan?
Yes.
Okay.
Right. Which I gotta admit, you know, when they redid the Khan one with Cumberbatch.
Yeah. Cumberbatch.
Yeah, I think that Wrath of Khan was better.
Really?
Yeah. I was in high school then, and my friends, and we used to like quote that, the second one. So that's honorable mention. Okay, the next one up is The Empire Strikes Back. Mm-hmm. I was like 16. I mean, I was like Luke Skywalker.
Yeah.
You know, you still had that kind of wanderlust and, you know, that wide-eyed. You know, you're just starting to hit adulthood a little bit, but you're like, what in the heck is this all about? And you're looking at adventure. And I remember seeing that. I could tell you exactly where I was. Like it just, you know, it's just a out of body experience. Really, it was just pleasurable.
It's the rare sequel that
was better. Oh yeah, you know,
than the original. And,
right.
And you know, my parents, my dad, and I grew up watching Star Wars together, and you can remember when the original, when A New Hope came out.
Yeah, I don't really remember that as well, but I know I was familiar with the franchise.
Yeah, and he said that it was just like when that movie came out, he thought like nothing could top that, you know, and.
Close to right too.
Empire
Strikes Back.
A New Hope. He was like, "What could top this?" And then Empire comes out. And he's like, "That was an even better movie."
Yeah, you know, it was really dynamite.
From then on, Star Wars, Lucas could do anything he wanted. So
he had the world by the tail. Mm-hmm. Okay, so now I'm going off the big franchises, kind of.
I knew you would.
All right, Christopher Nolan.
Okay.
You know what?
Yep.
Interstellar.
Interstellar. I've
fantastic.
Seen it.
Fantastic. I remember it just blew my mind when I got done with it. I was just like, boy, this is really good. I just loved that the physics were fairly true, you know.
And I was going to say, do you ever watch films and say, that's not possible?
We did. When I watched Gravity with my wife, there are a couple scenes. That was the one with, what's his name?
George Clooney.
Yeah, Clooney, right.
Sandra Bullock.
Yep, right? That's it. Yeah. It was a good movie and it was a fantastic film, but there were a couple spots where I'm like, that's not right. But this one, not so much. And the relationship between, was it the dad and the daughter?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Really, you know, I could identify with that. And it was so strong and it was just such a nice theme and it brought it all into focus. Yeah, it was a fantastic movie.
Mm-hmm.
I really like that one.
And then that's the one where Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah, it's the one and only. Believe it or not, I don't think I've ever seen him in another movie. And that was the first movie I'd seen him in.
He's been a fairly big star.
I know, and I don't think I've.
He's won
maybe
Oscars.
One or two. I know. What did he win an Oscar for?
He won an Oscar for Dallas Buyers Club.
I didn't see it.
And
I was not in the movie. My kids were too young then.
and I'm glad you asked me that because it reminded me, like it was almost like a trivia question. It reminded me of the time you and I played trivia together at Highland, which was really fun. And
we got
second.
Yeah.
Tie, right?
Right. Yeah, bitter. It was a little bitter.
Which was questionable. We technically won, but they had to get a winner. But that's an awesome list. And,
yeah. Well, I got one more because that's only three.
Yeah. Well, no, you said Star Trek.
I gave an honorable mention.
Okay. Okay.
I didn't count.
Okay.
That was only an honorable mention.
Okay. So give me your last one.
I cheated. I made it five.
Yeah.
Arrival.
Arrival.
Have you seen Arrival?
No, I have not.
You got to put it on your list.
Okay.
It is fantastic. It has the child-parent relationship, which is really a strong theme in it, which is really good. It has brain science in it. It has language in it. So, and the underlying theme is how language relates to what our brain does.
Oh, wow.
Which I actually read kind of a classic book not too long before it, on metaphors we live by, which the people made an argument that, you know, the way we speak is so paramount to how we think. But that was the whole theme of the movie. And it was, and then there was the time aspect was in there again. It was just fantastic. My mind was blown. Jeremy Renner.
I know Jeremy Renner.
Yeah, he's in it. And okay. I can't remember who else is in it, but it was just really good.
Is it fairly recent?
Maybe I'm thinking it's within the last 10 years, maybe like 2012, 13, something. I have a copy. If I see it at home, I'm going to put it in your box.
Love
do you
it.
Have a DVD player still?
I do have a DVD player because I still have DVDs. And
I do too, but I never play them.
I haven't fully converted to digital, that's awesome. That's a great list.
Thank you.
So,
okay. So what would be on your quick short list?
Well, okay. A quick sci-fi. Short list. I would also have Empire Strikes Back.
Good.
I am one of the few people who feel like Revenge of the Sith episode 3.
Hey, you and Mr. Hutchinson.
Yep, I feel like that's a good film. Yep. And I do like it more I'm a huge sucker for, I said this with Miss Nistel in our podcast, I loved seeing how the villain becomes the villain. And so in Harry Potter, the Half-Blood Prince, that's like the storyline. I loved seeing Anakin become Darth Vader. I thought that was really cool.
I have to go back and watch it. I haven't watched that much.
Yeah. And then, you know, I'm going to pull another Star Wars film because I'm more the blockbuster guy. I would say... I really thought Force Awakens when the return of 2015 film, the first one with Rey.
The first one of the last three?
Correct, yeah.
Yeah.
I thought that was cool.
I loved it. J.J. Yeah. Abrams did that one, too. Yep. He pulled all the right strings. Some people said it was a replay. I'm like, I don't care. It was really good.
I agree. I didn't care at all.
That first one was great.
I didn't care at all. Yeah. I thought it was such a cool cool revisiting of some of our favorite characters.
Yeah.
I love that the protagonist is a female. I just thought that was so cool.
Oh, that went well.
Yeah. I thought it was cool because, like, my niece – mm-hmm. loved Star Wars.
Oh yeah, so you really got to powerful.
And then and then she's able to see, you know, a character be the hero,
right?
You know, not just be Princess Leia, who's kind of a, you know,
dangling on the thread.
Sure. Yeah. She sees Rey out there, you know, beating Kylo Ren.
That's a beautiful perspective. I like that. It really brings it home.
And I thought that was really cool.
Yeah.
And then my last one, which is not, this isn't a ranking. My last one is going to be kind of strange. I always really liked the movie Prometheus. And I don't know if you ever saw
it. I haven't seen it.
It was kind of a subplot of the Alien franchise, explaining how the xenomorph alien became what it was.
Really?
It's a really interesting story. But yeah, it's kind of more of an unknown version of the franchise. All right, so we got your Mount Rushmore list, and I know there's probably more that you would include there if you could, and. You know, my list is more of a rookie list compared to yours.
No. So here's a very good list.
If you have recommendations, just shoot me an email.
I will do. Yeah.
So the last question that I like to ask everybody is, what's your why? Why do you teach?
I had some thoughts. I thought
then the science fiction took them away.
I really, really enjoy the intellectual stimulation. I mean, it's always intellectually engaging for me. So the time just days go by really, really quickly. And at some point, that's kind of a good thing. You know, some people just talk about how work just drags on. Work never drags on because I'm always engaged, you know, and I'm always trying to engage the students, or I'm always trying to learn something myself to do it better. And then there's a lot of things that go on behind the scenes also that, you know, even when I'm not in front of students that are intellectually engaging. And then the other thing is there's some point to it. You know, you can kind of go, hey, I did something that made a difference for people. You know, you affected people positively. And there's, you know, if I had stayed in engineering, I don't know that I'd ever gotten that out of it. I mean, it's a little harder for some people to point, you know, to something positive. You know, being something good for somebody else is, I mean, you know, when you get older, that's when you kind of go, well, isn't that what it's kind of all about, really? You know, and so I try to make good experiences and, you know, have a positive effect on students. And that's enough, those two. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I think with teaching, there's so much that goes into the job that people don't see.
And, yeah. A lot of fun things. Yeah. And like, I think one of the things you had mentioned before you might ask about was like a favorite lesson.
Yeah.
And it's for me, it's not so much a favorite lesson as it is there are facets of teaching that I like better than others. You know, I like really understanding things really well so that I can make experiences that, you know, help students understand. I'm really try to, you know, understanding is my, and, you know, and to be able to think are my two big themes that I try to run through. Help kids understand students, not just know facts, but understand them. And then that, then be able to, you know, think their way through things. And so those are two big things. And so, you know, there's some of the thinking and some of the process that go into that developing curriculum and then engaging with students. And then there's, you know, some other parts that I don't like as much. But it'd be more like, I wouldn't break it down to a single lesson, more like some of the different, some of the many different facets of the thing that, you know, the job that we do.
Sure.
Yeah.
And if you can teach students to understand, to learn, to struggle and move past that or work through that struggle, you can teach them to do anything, right? Yeah.
Right. And that's, you know, some every once in a while standards conversations come up or, you know, like state standards or, and those are all very good. But, you know, I've had lots of students come through here and, you know, sometimes we haven't covered this or we haven't covered that. It's not coverage. It's the more of the big ideas. And that's why you got to move. That's why we talked about moving our standards to a very, you know, big level, getting them to the level where they're more engaging and they're more big ideas and putting ideas together than rather than small level. Like you got to know that, I don't know, sodium chloride is table salt.
Yeah.
Well, obviously a trite example, but
yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, that's what keeps me going.
Awesome.
Well, at least for a bit.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for being on the podcast. And if you folks need a recommendation on a science fiction film, email Jay Herzog at ifacadets.net. He will hook you up. So
will do.
Awesome. Well, thanks.
Thanks
for being
Michael.
On.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode. If you like what you hear, give us a follow on Spotify, Anchor, or wherever you listen to podcasts.